I think my why back then was like, you know, not to live an ordinary life and to like, you know, try to do something different. I think my why now is more of changing people's lives. Definitely people in my inner team, you know what I mean? Like, I want us all to look back on this time and be financially set, be mentally stable, and all come out of this as a team and really do other projects from this to make an impact on Cleveland and on the world in general. And I think, you know, right now, that's my new goal is like, how many people can I bring along with me on this journey? And how many lives can I change? And I think that's like the new driver.
Let's discover what people are building in the greater Cleveland community. We are telling the stories of Northeast Ohio's entrepreneurs, builders, and those supporting them. Welcome to the Lay of the Land podcast, where we are exploring what people are building in Cleveland and throughout Northeast Ohio. I am your host, Jeffrey Stern, and today I had the absolute pleasure of speaking with Andre Sisco, the manager for Machine Gun Kelly and XX Brands, brand strategist and investor, co-owner of the 27 Club, the renowned coffee lounge and kitchen here in Cleveland, Ohio, and managing partner at Deadlogic, a marketing strategy and brand management firm. Andre is a serial entrepreneur with more than 10 years of entertainment, international logistics, and merchandising experience. Invested in wealth building through ownership and community, he is dedicated to creating businesses that disrupt, that educate, and that enhance opportunities, all while creating access and equity across a plethora of industries. This was such a genuinely fun conversation for me, getting to explore Dre's upbringing and ties to Cleveland, the intersection of art and of business, the history and evolution of his relationship with Machine Gun Kelly, starting a label, bringing Drake to Ohio for the first time, giving back to the community here in Cleveland, balance, luck, motivations, reinvention, fatherhood, and ultimately enjoying the journey along the way. So please enjoy my conversation with Andre Sisco after a brief message from our sponsors. Lay of the Land is brought to you by Impact Architects and by 90. As we share the stories of entrepreneurs building incredible organizations in Cleveland and throughout Northeast Ohio, Impact Architects has helped hundreds of those leaders, many of whom we have heard from as guests on this very podcast, realize their own visions and build these great organizations. I believe in Impact Architects and the people behind it so much that I have actually joined them personally in their mission to help leaders gain focus, align together, and thrive by doing what they love. If you too are trying to build great, Impact Architects is offering to sit down with you for a free consultation or provide a free trial through 90, the software platform that helps teams build great companies. If you are interested in learning more about partnering with Impact Architects or by leveraging 90 to power your own business, please go to ia.layoftheland.fm. The link will also be in our show notes. So, Andre, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I was thinking about where the right place to start would be. And, you know, I have to just come back to the origin story. You know, who is Andre Sisco? And, you know, obviously from a place of today and the present, you know, we can break down, I think, the whole plethora of things that you are working on from, you know, entertainment, logistics, entrepreneurship, working with and helping to manage the careers of, you know, real formidable artists, you know, very recently becoming a father. So I think we can get to all those. But you started here in Cleveland, Ohio. And maybe, you know, without all of those branching pursuits on your mind. So I'd love to just hear about, you know, where you came from, what transpired over your time here to put you on this path.
Yeah, for sure. I was born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. My mom is a telecommunications engineer at University Hospitals, and my dad is a retired Cleveland police officer. Grew up on the east side, like Lee and Harvard area. Went to Catholic schools, Christian schools. They tried to keep me in private schools, which I appreciate now, but hung out with, you know, kids in the neighborhood, regular kid, riding bikes, et cetera, et cetera. They always wanted to pressure me to go to college because I never I don't know if pressure is the right word, but, you know, I never, traditionally in my family, people didn't go to college and there weren't many college graduates. So, you know, that was a goal that they had for me. So they worked really hard to, you know, put me on a path. I ended up graduating from Trinity High School, St. Garfield Heights, went on to Bowling Green State University, started my major in computer science, thinking that I was like picking a major that was gonna, you know, make some money. Ended up doing that for a semester and realizing that I really wasn't that good at it and I didn't enjoy it, and kind of switched my path to marketing and business. And through joining my fraternity and getting involved in student organizations, realized that I just had a knack for leadership and marketing and in business, like I said. And that led to kind of starting my own business. We were doing events. I was on the event planning committee for the school. So we would plan like these huge concerts for the school and they would give us budgets. We would manage the budget. So I learned a lot, you know, in terms of just like the logistics and execution of concerts, and just saw how much money they were making. And it was just going back to the school. And I'm like, wow, I could kind of do this by myself. Mm-hmm. And got with a couple of friends. We started a company. It was called Living Legends LLC.
Living Legends.
Yeah. And started doing parties, but realized quickly that our friends would fight at our parties and get them shut down. So I figured, man, how can I make money if my friends are fighting and getting the party shut down before I can, you know, collect all of the revenue? And
they're right. A fair question.
I do concerts. I have 3 months leading up to the concert to sell tickets and collect all my revenue. So they can't really ruin it, even if there is a fight.
It's a receivables problem.
So I got into doing concerts, and that kind of took me into like booking. I would book artists for shows, do the shows myself, execute them. And then from there, started to book Machine Gun Kelly to open up for artists that I would bring into town. Booked his first 20 city tour. I had a job at the city of Cleveland at the taxation department. That I love. I love the people, but I hated the morale there.
Sure.
Yeah. Booked the 20 city tour for him. We got in a van. I quit my job and I've been on this journey ever since.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
I think that lays a great foundation for a lot of what we'll talk about here today. And before we get to that all, I wanted to ground it in something else, which I don't know, a motto or a mantra of sorts, but in this idea of killing ordinary and how you kind of came, you know, and maybe it's from an aversion maybe to that morale, but to cultivate that kind of aversion to average, understanding what excellence is and holding yourself to, I don't know, that higher standard across everything that it is you're working on.
Yeah. I mean, I think working at the city of Cleveland really helped me come up with that, because I didn't come up with that. I had a friend who used to do all of our art for our promotional like advertisements and stuff for shows that we would do. His name was Marcus in college, and he came up with the kill ordinary. And I just was like, man, I love that. I just never wanted to live an ordinary life. Like, I didn't want to get a job as a corporate job and just, you know, work out. And you know what I mean? I wanted to kind of, you know, take an alternative path. And I learned that while I was in school. And, you know, through my experience of starting my own business and going through the trials and tribulations of that, and, you know, losing a shit ton of money and, you know, crawling back, et cetera, et cetera. And I think kill ordinary came from that. And I just always kept it like as a life mantra. Like it was two of them. One was live to progress. I never wanted my yesterday to be better than my tomorrow. And then, and wanted to always keep progression as a theme in my life. And then also, kill ordinary was just like, don't settle for ordinary, always, you know, kind of custom curate the life that you want that's made for you. You know what I mean? And I think it's highly possible. And I'm thankful for where I am today.
Mm. So when you think about where you are today, which, you know, for me from the outside feels like in this place of creative management, kind of at the intersection of art and of culture and of business all at the same time, how would you describe just at a high level what it is that you do?
I would say, you know, at the core, I'm just a entrepreneur. I mean, as a manager for Machine Gun Kelly, I always approach it from an entrepreneurial standpoint where, you know, I think a lot of the journey of being an entrepreneur is rooted in honesty, patience, trust, and growth. You know what I mean? And the growth might, and also timing. To me, timing is like one of the most important things. So, you know, like I treat him, you know, and his businesses like they're my businesses. And then we partner on a lot of businesses. So, you know, I kind of bring in a lot of those early lessons and just lessons that I've learned, you know, over the years from, you know, doing shows. Okay, how do you do a show? First of all, you got to have a what? What is it? What are you selling? Then you got to know how to translate that message. So what's your marketing? What's your hook? And then you execute the show. You get it and you want it to be clean. So what's the creative around the show? What does it look like? What are people going to talk about while they're at the show? What's the experience that they're going to have while at the show? And then, you know, obviously the business, how much are we making? What's the deal? And then on the back end, you know, what's the follow up, the recap? How do we grow from here? And I've always treated everything like that. You know what I mean? And that's these are lessons that I learned when I was, you know, 19 years old, you know, doing shows for four figures. And now we do shows for, you know, 6-7 figures. And it's like, okay, same lessons apply, but I just try to get better and grow after everyone and, you know, learn, obviously putting smarter people around me. I don't know if I got off track, but,
no, I don't, you know, there is no track.
That's kind of like how I treat everything. I would just say I'm an entrepreneur and an investor, but, you know, I like working on projects with my friends. And a lot of times those end up being brands or different businesses that end up growing and taking a life of their own. So, you know, I think that, you know, at the essence, I'm just an entrepreneur that was molded into a music manager and an investor because I also relate to entrepreneurs. And that's kind of like where the investment piece comes in. I haven't been investing as long, but, you know, over the last 3 or 4 years, I've really got into VC, started a fund with some friends of mine that are from Cleveland. And, you know, I really related to entrepreneurs and their stories and team building and leadership more than I did, you know, stock markets or other more traditional investments. So I would just say, you know, at my core, I'm an entrepreneur and an investor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciated your framing of, you know, thinking about art, music, and the work that you're doing on that from an entrepreneurial lens. And I always find this intersection of art and business really interesting because in the way that I'm drawn to entrepreneurs all the time, I find myself also drawn to artists. And it's just generally, I think, because the most interesting people tend to be the most interested people. And artists and entrepreneurs, I think, have this kindred, you know, curiosity and passion and motivation for all the things that they're working on.
Absolutely. Most vulnerable people.
Yeah.
In terms of like what they do, because they put it all out on the line and it's up to the people or society to judge their output a lot of times. So like, that's why I love it. I'm like, all right, you know, it's a dice roll. So it's not boring.
It's certainly not boring. It's certainly not easy either. What is your approach to this intersection between artistic expression and business? And, you know, obviously from where you are today, you know, I imagine, and we can talk about some of these too, but you've kind of cracked it a bit. But, you know, when you were starting out, you know, when you're 18, instead of from the vantage point you have today, what was your approach to ensure that the creative ideas, you know, resonate with a broader audience?
I guess I think I was always just trying stuff at that age. Like I knew culture. I knew I was, you know, always hanging out and being, you know, meeting new people. I definitely made it a focus of mine. And I think this came from like maybe my dad and growing up was to just hang with different pockets of people and different, you know, expose myself to different things. So I was never like the kid that was just hanging with these kids. I hung with art kids. I hung with business kids. I hung with science kids. And, you know, I think from that, I really like learned how to be relatable to, or just learn how to think in a way that was relatable to, you know, different groups of people. And, you know, the things that I would work on, I would try to, you know, create products, whether it be shows early on. We used to do fashion shows that would just like, you know, that would spark interest from people. You know what I mean? Or that would be something that was on the cuff. I think a lot of the things that we did when we were younger, we listened to the music, but we also listened to the audience that we had. And we knew like, hey, the kids are into this artist. Let's hurry up and get them. But and bring them to Ohio before anybody else can. And that, you know, that led to us doing shows with like Big Sean earlier or Drake. I think I probably, you know, brought Drake to Ohio the first time that anyone did, you know, and really just helped us build our brand. In terms of the fashion shows, I knew just from, you know, being around urban audience, I hate saying urban, just a black audience, that the kids were into fashion and they were like, you know, it was kind of like a competition. So we started doing fashion shows and we would kind of create this competition between different universities. So it would be Bowling Green versus Toledo and Ohio State versus Cincinnati. And I would go to these schools, you know, get a person to kind of oversee their team. And they would do practices. They would rent out rooms at the university. And I used the competition to like hype up this event. And the event would, you know, leading up to the event, and the event would happen every year. And we would sell 4,000 or 5,000 tickets to kids. And they would travel from all over the state to a fashion show. And it was like, I don't know, it was like a hip hop fashion show. It was like it was cool though for what we were doing, you know. Everybody, it was like an event that all my friends looked forward to. You know, we sold out. I think we sold out the State Theater in Cleveland. We would do like this huge convention center in Toledo for a few years. So like just being aware of what was going on in culture and then finding, you know, products or events or experiences to and tailoring them to that so that, you know, people would garner interest.
What did it take to get Drake to come to Ohio to perform for the first time?
$15,000. He probably doesn't do anything for $15,000 anymore.
Yeah. Wow. What was kind of the pitch and, you know, the vision beyond that?
I had a friend who worked in music. He worked at a label in LA. He had graduated from the same school as me and he kind of connected the dots, and it was early Drake. So, you know, I don't think they were really getting that many offers. And it was like right when I forget the name of the So Far Gone mixtape was coming out. We just, you know, timing is everything.
So let's, I think just to set a good foundation for this too, layer on, you know, Dead Logic and, you know, just tell us a little bit about what it is, how you've thought about it, how it's grown over time, you know, its role in this whole journey you've been on.
Yeah. So Dead Logic really started as an idea that I had probably like 2013, 2014. To create a space in Cleveland. I was living in Cleveland. I was like, man, I really want to create a space that is a resource for other people like me. So this was what I was planning. The space would have, you know, access to a photography studio. It would have camera equipment. There would be recording equipment. It would be a gallery space, so it could be easily transformed. It would be, the plan was to have a nonprofit element to it, to bring in kids and teach them about creative industries. And that's how Dealogic started. I opened up a studio in 2015 in Midtown Cleveland, 53rd and Hamilton, and financed everything myself. I was still working with MGK. I was still, you know, doing shows, doing tours. Me and him had started a festival together. It's called EST Fest. So I was, that was kind of like my main, you know, source of income. But on the side, I was like working on this spot, and it was like, you know, it was like, you know, just an idea that I had. And it didn't really make a lot of money. I think it was kind of ahead of its time. It was before like co-working spaces and things like that. So I was trying to get people to kind of either come in and co-work, or, you know, just use the space and rent it so that I could make some type of income. It didn't really take off but it took off from a cultural standpoint, because the events that we had in there, you know, we would do art shows. We would do, I created a nonprofit. It was called the Make Workshop. So I would get kids in there and have all kind of my friends come and teach them about creative industries. So it was really awesome. I missed that spot. Unfortunately, the landlord wasn't as ecstatic about the space as we were. So he gave me some problems with it. I only had the space for 2 years. But, you know, during that time, like kind of the supplement income and to pay for the space, I would just take on marketing projects and take on different clients. And that's kind of like how the gist of Dealogic as a consulting firm / creative management firm came about today. Yeah.
I feel the experimentation from all the work that you're doing as a theme.
Yeah. So I just, you know, ride the wave, I guess.
Yeah.
Lay of the Land is brought to you by John Carroll University's Bowler College of Business, widely recognized as one of the top business schools in the region. As we've heard time and time again from entrepreneurs here on Lay of the Land, many of whom are proud alumni of John Carroll University, success in this ever-changing world of business requires a dynamic and innovative mindset, deep understanding of emerging technologies and systems, strong ethics, leadership prowess, acute business acumen, all qualities nurtured through the Bowler College of Business. With 4 different MBA programs of study spanning professional, online, hybrid, and 1 year flexible, the Bowler College of Business provides flexible timelines and various class structures for each MBA track, including online, in-person, hybrid, and asynchronous, all to offer the most effective options for you, including the ability to participate in an elective international study tour, providing unparalleled opportunities to expand your global business knowledge by networking with local companies overseas and experiencing a new culture. The career impact of a Bowler MBA is formative and will help prepare you for this future of business and get more out of your career. To learn more about John Carroll University's Bowler MBA programs, please go to business.jcu.edu. The Bowler College of Business is fully accredited by AACSB International, the highest accreditation a college of business can have.
When you think about how you balance all the things that you're working on, you know, and we can talk about some of the other work as well. I definitely want to talk about, you know, the 27 Club, but being involved across, you know, all these entrepreneurial endeavors, how do you think about, you know, balance and like where to focus your own efforts?
I think for me, and this is a transition that I'm still kind of going through, but really went through in the last 2 or 3 years, was just transitioning and learning to look at things on a macro level and lead from a more macro level than being in the woods. I mean, I call it the weeds, being in the weeds every day and, you know, really focusing on myself as a leader and creating teams and putting smarter people around me, because I have so many projects that I was driving myself crazy and I didn't really have the trust to hand off or delegate things the right way. So, you know, I really had to be intentional about focusing on being a leader and putting myself in that role, because I was so used to always being hands-on with every element of the business or every element of every project that I was on. And I think, you know, I've come a long way. There's still a long way to go, but I think leadership is a skill set that can transfer and transition into any business. So you can take that business and you can take that skill set and build a house. You can start a coffee shop. You can do a global tour. It's really, you know, the same set of guidelines, you know, around like team building and supporting your team and vision and things like that. And I think like I've learned to focus on my strengths and hire people and bring people in that are smarter than me and that complete my teams. And it is working.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about, you know, some of the things that are working at this point. You know, as you get to experiment, you know, kind of double down on the things that are making the kind of progress that you want them to make. What are you most excited about at the moment? You know, what's in the pike?
I'm always excited about anything MGK. I think that, you know, he's a phenomenal artist. I think the way that he includes Cleveland and just his roots and everything that he does is not common and unmatched. I think that, you know, he has, you know, a lot of potential to grow even more. So I'm excited about just new music from him and how to attack it. I think that, you know, the last 2 years have been super successful with him going into a more punk rock direction, but I'm excited for the challenge to, you know, get people to see him as the multifaceted, multidimensional creator that he is. And I think, you know, part of my job is to help translate that. Me and him together in our group, we started another company. It's called Floor 13. It's a full creative production and media company. And we're also going to sign artists. We're building out a facility in Los Angeles that we'll work out of. We've already done a couple of projects, a tour documentary, and working on a few more ideas. But super excited for that. The 27 Club is a coffee brand that we started. We started it during COVID. It was really just an idea to bring a piece of our travels from all of our tours that we've done back home. I think that, you know, we would travel around the world and we would be drawn to these coffee shops where you could, you know, get a cocktail. You could obviously grab food, drink, you can work, you can, you know, hang out. It was just like a really like multifunctional place, you know, with a great experience that you just felt like you didn't have to leave. And those were like, you know, for us being on the road, you either at a show in a venue or in a hotel, and it really was no in between. And, you know, these types of places served as like good vibes for us as a group. You know what I mean? When we wanted to meet up or wanted to get work done outside of a hotel, and we wanted to bring that to Cleveland. So we were like, oh, let's do a coffee shop. So COVID happens. We're in the middle of doing it. It kind of stalls the project with construction and getting permitting and stuff done through the city is super challenging. And we work through all of that, get the coffee shop done. It's a hit. People love it. Even during COVID, you know, they respond so well to the brand, to the merchandise that we sell. We were like, man, this is like bigger than just a coffee shop. We really want to turn it into a brand. So, you know, probably the last 18 months has really been focused on gearing it and transitioning it from a coffee shop to a real global coffee brand. Starting our retail journey locally, we just launched in 40 stores with Dave's Market and Lucky's, looking for multiple locations. We're doing pop-ups all over. We just did a pop-up around the Browns game in Los Angeles against the Rams. But really just, you know, finding cool ways and building a team around that brand to scale.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. I'm curious how you guys, you know, how you think about Cleveland and, you know, the opportunity, the history it's played in all your guys' lives, the impact ultimately that collectively you would like to have in the city?
Cleveland is so important to me. Like, I live in Los Angeles now, and, you know, a lot of our business is here, and I think we're able to be more efficient on a work level here. So, you know, from that standpoint, you know, we love living in LA, but I think as a group, Cleveland will always be home for us. You know what I mean? Like, when we come home, we always say it's just a different energy that we feel, you know, when we're all home and we get to hang out with friends that we grew up with and we've been through so many things and have been able to, you know, walk this journey with us. So, like, the energy is different. It's like, you know, when somebody, it's people who know you and then it's people who know you. And the energy when you talk to those people is different because they've seen you at all different levels of your life. You know what I mean? So, like, for me, Cleveland is always important. And, you know, part of my work and part of the things that I'm passionate about have to do with, you know, having an impact on Cleveland, whether that's in the business sector or the philanthropic sector or just from a cultural standpoint or experiential standpoint. I thrive off creating things for Cleveland, and it's a huge goal for us. And I think we take it personally. So,
yeah, yeah. Well, it's just, you know, there are not too many figures in my time here in Cleveland that I think generate the sheer quantity of enthusiasm and love and appreciation, you know, maybe outside LeBron that you guys have. So it's very cool to, I think, see that kind of attention and spotlight in a positive way, you know, mm-hmm. shined on Cleveland.
And we love LeBron and his team, you know, like, I'm friends with some of those guys and they're, you know, they were kind of like a precursor to us, obviously in the athletic way, but I mean, you know, in the athletic field, but like, you know, just what he was able to do in building an organic team of his friends. Like, we've always, you know, looked up to them and you know, are always cheering fellow Northeastern Ohioans on.
Mm. What have you learned about artists and their struggle in their own journey?
I think personally for me, one thing that I've learned is just an approach. You know what I mean? Like, you have to understand that when somebody shares art or idea or something with you, that they're being vulnerable and that this is something that's a piece of them. So, like, for example, like, if I hear a song for the first time, my immediate response is never to like shoot down an idea. Where I hear an idea for the first time, I don't shoot down an idea based on my first instinct. Sometimes I do if it's like incredibly like improbable idea or something like that. But I try to look at things, you know, from a more macro level where I'm like, oh, you know, song is good, but what if we, you know, tweaked it like this? Or what if we tweaked it like that? Or maybe ask questions around it to try to learn, you know, where the, you know, the origin story of the art came from. And that maybe that would make me understand kind of the goal of it. Because I think, like, if you comment and give your opinion too fast before you really get a chance to understand and experience art, no matter what the medium is, I feel like, you know, you could diminish someone's enthusiasm. You could, you know, speak too soon. So I just try to like speak very general at first and really try to understand where artists is coming from. And then, you know, rounds of creation and rounds of edits, you get more granular as you go along. And I think like you understand it. So you speaking from a place of love more so than, you know, feeling like it's very critical. And I think, you know, that helps with an artist's comfortability with you as a manager or whatever position you're in. I think that's something that people have to learn, because so often I just see people, you know, blurt out what comes to mind first. Oh, I don't like that. That's not hot. But it's like, you don't know his vision for that. This could be a demo. This could be, you know, the first round painting, whatever it is, but you need, you know, give a person a chance to kind of work through their process before you give them, you know, an absolute judgment on their art. And I think that helps with my relationship with clients that I work with, because it builds a sense of trust. It builds understanding. It builds just a creative rapport is what I call it, so that, you know, they do trust me and we can work through these things together. And then when I do give, you know, that one time where I'm like, I don't think it works, you know what I mean? Just because it's so far off, or maybe it's in, you know, whatever the reason, I think, you know, it's taken a lot more seriously than it would be if I didn't, you know, work through that process of letting them work through their process, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense.
It's like if you have an idea, like, oh, Dre, I want to start a podcast. And I'm like, podcasting is oversaturated. Like, I just start giving you reasons why. You'll never tell me another idea again. But who knew that your podcast, you found a white space to interview entrepreneurs in Cleveland and nobody else was doing it. You know what I mean? And it was, and if I would let you work through that process, you would, I would understand you more. And I think, like, you know, people don't let artists work through the process. And that's, you know, that's one big lesson that I've learned.
Mm-hmm. Right. And at the same time, you know, it's very easy to, there's a million, infinitely many things that can go wrong, you know, all the reasons that you won't succeed. And, you know, it's helpful to just, instill a bit of optimism, especially again, in this artist entrepreneurship parallel. It's about what can go right and, you know, the vision that you have for the future and how you make it happen.
Absolutely. And a lot of times, like, your first idea, like, you know, failing through that first idea is what leads you to where you want to be, or the exact, you know, space that you're meant to be in. But you would never know if you didn't work through that process and end up at a place where you can, you know, recap and make a decision like, hey, this worked, this didn't work, let me lean more in this direction and, you know, leave this other piece that I thought was going to work behind and see how this goes. And I think that evolution is, is where you get success or whatever, whatever you define as success.
For you personally, how have you cultivated that mentality of overcoming adversity and failure to, you know, keep moving forward towards the goals you've set out, not wholly consumed by the outcomes along the way?
I just didn't have a plan B. For me, it was like, I don't know, man. I just didn't have a plan B. I think like sports and my parents really helped me like understand the value of hard work, and sports helped me understand resilience and bouncing back and using losses as motivation. And it gave me a competitive edge. And I think like that competitive edge drives me a lot. I make up these things in my head a lot where I'm like, man, you know, people don't want to see me do this, or people think that I can't do this, even if it doesn't exist. And it's like a driver for me that I'm like, oh, people think, you know, we can only do rock music, or people think we can't sell out the Brown Stadium. You know what I mean? It's that.
Yeah. That it's a chip on your shoulder. Is, you can prove them.
And it comes from being in Cleveland too. Cause like, I don't know if you know this. I don't think you're from Cleveland, but I mean, I know you're not from Cleveland originally. You're honorary Cleveland, but you know, people call Cleveland a crab in the bucket city. You know what I mean? So like when I was coming up, you know, people would, you know, say things and hate on you and try to bring you down. And I was always, you know, it kind of gives you that chip on your shoulder where you like, okay, I got to prove everybody wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I've certainly seen it's across the board. Cause what I find also, I'm working on like a holistic thesis for it, but I feel like the flip side of the coin to the Midwestern, you know, humility and modesty that's really kind and genuine is, at the same time, this sort of like, you know, self-deprecation almost sometimes. Mm-hmm. And there's, I hear it across, you know, many dozens of entrepreneurs in Cleveland, this just chip on the shoulder to prove not just that they can succeed, but that they can succeed in Cleveland, that it can be done here in the Midwest. And I love it. You know, I think it's great.
Yeah. It's a gift and a curse. Mostly a gift, though. Mostly a gift. Because, like, you need that, man. You need something to keep you going. You know, life and just this journey is hard, especially, like, when you're just starting out. I tell young people that all the time. I'm just like, you got to find a why. You know what I mean? What's your why? Even if you got to make shit up like I do.
Yeah. What would you say is your own why?
I think my why back then was like, you know, not to live an ordinary life and to like, you know, try to do something different. I think my why now is more of changing people's lives. Definitely people in my inner team, you know what I mean? Like, I want us all to look back on this time and be financially set, be mentally stable, and all come out of this as a team and really do other projects from this to make an impact on Cleveland and on the world in general. And I think, you know, right now, that's my new goal is like, how many people can I bring along with me on this journey? And how many lives can I change? And I think that's like the new driver.
And I imagine that's where you begin to layer in things like investing and, you know, I mean, literally investing in other people.
Yep, exactly. I know, like, you know, getting into investing was like me seeing deals and me seeing it. Like, I always try to surround myself with smarter people. I got great mentors that, you know, I owe a lot to and that have helped me tremendously throughout my journey. And I know, and, you know, and it was something that was important to me to kind of pay it forward. And, you know, I would see them investing in companies and having exit events and, you know, and I was like, man, that's crazy. Like, that's how you kind of, you know, develop wealth is by, you know, going through these exit events, having equity in companies. And I'm like, I think I want to do that. And I just kind of dove in head first. Luckily, I had some good friends that, you know, were able to kind of outline a path for me so I wasn't just running around like a chicken with my head cut off investing money. But, you know, we've been able to do some really cool deals. I've been able to add value to some entrepreneurs and some companies and brands just through my network and, you know, my skill set. And I really enjoy it. I enjoy just, you know, I relate to the drive of an entrepreneur. I relate to not having a plan B. I relate to just like that confidence that you have to dig out of yourself to complete an invest, to lock in an investor when you only got like 2 months of funding left. I relate to that angst. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the best, worst thing ever because like you're in the situation, but you got to like dig it out of yourself to perform. And when I hear, you can feel that energy on a Zoom call or in person, wherever you are, like it, when that person is like passionate and when you feel that passion, it's like, okay, I gotta roll with this one. I definitely like look at other variables, you know, when making investments, but a lot of the, you know, the thing of it comes down for me to the team in the operator and, you know, and how determined they are.
Yeah. I mean, cause it even goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where it's like, you know, at the onset, the idea that you have most likely is not going to be the idea, you know, that wins in the end. And so you have to be able to, as an operator, you know, figure it out along the way.
Right. Pivot. Buzzword. Buzzword. Yeah. The last 2 years is pivot.
Yeah. Well, how have you thought about that? You know, I'd be curious, you know, both from the perspective of entrepreneurship, but even, you know, with the, I don't know, the right words to describe it, but if you call it a reinvention of sorts for Machine Gun Kelly in terms of, you know, genre shift and just brand and thinking about what it is to reorient in a new direction.
You know, in terms of just like him reinventing himself, that usually starts with him, man. He's really, really like ahead of his time in that way. And I just don't think a lot of artists have the self-awareness to reinvent. You know what I mean? Like, once you experience some level of success, you feel like you have to keep duplicating kind of what got you to that success. And only the best and most prolific artists take the risk and reinvent themselves. And he's always willing to do that. He's always willing to take risk. He's always, you know what I mean? And that's, I learned a lot of that element for myself from him. You know what I mean? And I, you know, we had these conversations. Oh, I want to, you know, this is early in his career. Oh, I want to start playing guitar with the band. And that really wasn't done by a rapper before. You know what I mean? This is like, this is like 2013. We on Warped Tour. He like, I want to start doing we on the Rick Ross tour. I want to start, you know, playing guitar with the band. I want to bring a band. I want Machine Gun Kelly to be known as a band. And then I want, you know, obviously I'm Machine Gun Kelly, but when we tour, we're a band and people know that I'm coming with a band and my live show is crazy. And, you know, that was always his foresight, honestly, and his vision for it. And I, you know, and it just, you know, for me, it was always trust. And I, you know, add my two cents here and there. But, you know, I think like him reinventing himself was always something that he was already up on. So, you know, kudos to him.
Yeah, kudos to him. Yeah.
But for me, I mean, like, it's important to reinvent yourself. You know what I mean? Or, you know, I just, the live to progress mantra that I have is just, it's about being uncomfortable. I always want to be uncomfortable. I always want to, if I'm comfortable in a situation, then I'm not pushing myself hard enough. And I'm mindful of that. And I'm always like pushing myself to this next level of uncomfortability, because I know that that's where, you know, my next mission lies, my next accomplishment lies, my next, you know, whatever it is that God has for me. Mm.
So, the first time we were going to chat, you know, we had to reschedule for, I think, a truly miraculous reason, which was that you know, a child was born and you became a father.
Yeah.
And you talk about, you know, being uncomfortable. I'd love to understand from your perspective, as it's so nascent and recent, you know, how has your perspective changed?
This might be the most uncomfortable I've been, because somebody's life is in my hands. It's crazy. Like, I think as a man, you know, going through pregnancy with your partner, it's a little surreal, because it's not happening kind of inside the confines of your body. It's more in her body, and you're just trying to, you know, understand what's going on, but you're seeing like this alien experience happen, and it's like something is in her belly, like pushing on the walls, like trying to get out. And like, that was like a challenge for me, because like, I was like, man, this is, it's crazy, but like, I don't feel the things that she's feeling. Like, am I callous? Am I not, you know, am I not being understanding? And I just think it was just like a process that I had to go through. And I think towards the end, it became more real. And then when the baby, you know, came out, you hear the baby crying and all of that. Like, it's, I don't know. It was like the most emotional moment that, you know, I've ever had with my wife. And it was something that I would never forget. And, you know, just being home the last few days with the baby, and, you know, learning that, you know, my life probably won't be the same again is definitely like a little bit scary for me. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, how do we adjust? Because like, me and my wife, I've always like lived the on the go lifestyle. She's an entrepreneur, I'm an entrepreneur. We both travel a lot. And now it's like this person that we got to take care of and, you know, plan for and make sure, you know, he's healthy and take him to the doctor and all of it, you know, and it's a transition, but I think it's fun. It's a fun challenge. I've never enjoyed something so much that has caused me sleepless nights, is what I would say.
Mm. Like, yeah, that's beautiful.
I enjoy not sleeping because of him. It's cool. So that would be my little take on that.
Yeah. It seemed like a perfect uncomfortable detour. So yeah, I appreciate you going there.
Super uncomfortable. Super uncomfortable, but
yeah. So I think we covered a lot of ground here.
Yeah.
I could talk to you about a million things. But as we kind of work to bookend the conversation here, I'd love to just ask if, you know, reflecting on your whole journey, you know, it's probably impossible to, you know, pick the bits and pieces along the way that you think have been most salient, but of anything that we haven't talked about that you think is kind of most important to highlight as part of your journey, you know, what might that be?
I would just say, like, you know, the me right now would just say patience. You know what I mean? Like, and giving yourself grace. Because I think, like, as creators and entrepreneurs, I think we're our biggest critics a lot of times. And I think, like, you can be with the world we live in and anxiety and how people compare themselves to other people, it could be crippling to action. And action is the way that you get to where you want to go. And I think, like, you know, having patience with yourself and, you know, I don't necessarily, like, know if it works or whatever, but just, like, positive self-talk, things like that. You know what I mean? Building tools into your process and knowing that, hey, I'm not always going to wake up in the morning and feel like I can beat the resistance. Mm. And if I can't, or if I feel like that, what tools and resources do I have? Is it a mantra? Is it a book that I go to? Is it a way to trick myself and tell myself that, hey, I'm going to go to the gym and just do one push-up and end up doing, you know, a whole workout? Like, what's your thing? What's your systems that you create for yourself to help you get over the resistance? Because all artists, all entrepreneurs, anybody that wants to create something, they have to get over a level of fear, doubt, and resistance. And having patience and grace with yourself are tools to really, you know, get you through those trying times. So I would say, like, you know, part of my journey and one thing that I've learned on my journey is just to be patient with my journey, and that, you know, everything is always going to work out as long as I put the work in and keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Mm. Wow. Well said.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I'll ask you then our traditional closing question, which is fun and definitely curious to get your take on, which is for a hidden gem in Cleveland. You know, something that other folks may not know about, but perhaps they should.
27 Club. No. I'll give you another one. Is it food or whatever?
Anything. Experiential, you know, food, whatever.
From a food standpoint, and I like to get food late at night. And in Cleveland, it's not that many options. So it's this spot in Tremont called Lava Room. And they serve food super late, and it's good food. It's healthy food. They switch up the menu. I think they still switch the menu up. I know the last time I went there, they revamped it and, like, changed, like, they painted the walls and stuff, because it used to just be, like, dark and red lights. So it looks like a little bit more, like, modernized. I actually prefer the hole in the wall look, but the food is great there. Mm. And it's called Lava Room. And it's open late, and you can get good food late. That's my hidden gem in Cleveland.
Mm. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dre, I just want to thank you again for coming on, sharing your story, more about the work you're doing. It's very cool. Very cool to hear.
Thanks for having me, and it's nice to meet you, Jeffrey.
Absolutely.
All right, take it easy.
That's all for this week. Thank you for listening. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. So if you have any feedback, please send over an email to jeffrey@layoftheland.fm or find us on Twitter @podlayoftheland or @sternjefe, J-E-F-E. If you or someone you know would make a good guest for our show, please reach out as well and let us know. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or on your preferred podcast player. Your support goes a long way to help us spread the word and continue to bring the Cleveland founders and builders we love having on the show. We'll be back here next week at the same time to map more of the land. The Lay of the Land podcast was developed in collaboration with the Up Company LLC. At the time of this recording, unless otherwise indicated, we do not own equity or other financial interests in the company which appear on this show. All opinions expressed by podcast participants are solely their own and do not reflect the opinions of any entity which employs us. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.